WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And guess what, folks? It is Friday, October 14th, 2016. That's right. You have made it. The end of the week is here, and you are just a few hours away from the weekend. All right. It's going to be a hot show today. We've got a ton of discussion. Of course, we will preview the Michigan State and Northwestern college football game that will take place 3:30 p.m. tomorrow afternoon at Spartan Stadium. Can MSU stop the bleeding? That's the big question now. Again, the first three-game losing streak dating back to 2009 for this team. The Wildcats come to town for the 101st homecoming game. Also, the Detroit Red Wings, they officially have begun their regular season. Can you believe that? Hockey is in full-blown mode right now. And the Wings, they don't start off the year ideally the way they would like to, okay? So we'll give you a Red Wings season preview. We'll also recap what took place last night between, of course, the Washington Nationals and the LA Dodgers in Major League Baseball. You don't want to miss that. And, hey, on the back end of the show, we will reflect a bit on the week that has been here on our airwaves and beyond. We dub it Reflection Friday. So, hey, if you want to be a part of the show, you know how you can do that. Just simply pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even join us via Twitter at WKAR_sports or tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, folks, can you believe already that we are talking about week 8 in the world of high school football action? Crazy, right? Week 8 already? Now, we're coming into the home stretch of high school football, and here are a few of your top matchups to look for tonight. Grand Ledge is at East Lansing, led by, of course, quarterback, wide receiver, combination of Hunter Helmick and Kentre Patterson. Of Helmick's 1,027 passing yards and 6 touchdowns, get this, Patterson has totaled 468 yards and 2 TDs. Also want to note that usually each and every one of these games start at 7 p.m., but due to the MSU homecoming parade, that start time has been pushed back to 7:30 p.m. Also, look for these games, Everett at Sexton, Olivet at Portland, Menominee faces DeWitt, Bath will need a win for a shot at automatically qualifying for the postseason. They will try to do so at Division 6, number 9, Langsburg, who holds an impressive 6-1 record. PW, Pomona Westphalia, is at Fowler. P-Dub features running back Jarrett Smith, who has totaled 1,473 rushing yards and 22 TDs. Leslie at Eden Rapids. And as we always do, we have to mention Stockbridge's own Mason G. Montgomery. Stockbridge lost to Olivet last week, but nonetheless, G. Montgomery is still leading all Mid-Michigan QBs with 1,678 yards, 28 TDs on 133 pass completions. Fun stuff there. All right, the Michigan State women's soccer team fell 2-1 to number 15 Minnesota yesterday at DeMartin Stadium. Now, the Gophers came out hot, scoring their first goal less than 10 minutes into the match. MSU sophomore Michaela Kovacs answered by scoring the Spartans' lone goal of the game and also evening the game at 1-1 heading into halftime. Then, in the 80th minute, Minnesota struck again, scoring what would be the game-winning goal. Michigan State's record is now 5-9-1, 2-6-0 in Big Ten Conference play. Their next match is this Sunday versus Wisconsin at 1 p.m. at DeMartin Stadium. Basketball season is just around the corner. The annual Michigan State Midnight Madness is tonight at the Brez. Doors open at 8:30 p.m. and admission is totally free. The event will begin around 9:30 p.m. when Tom Izzo, Susie Merchant, and players of both the men's and the women's teams will take pictures and sign autographs. Later on in the night, both teams will be introduced by yours truly. Can't believe I'm doing this for another year straight, folks. And this is where Izzo really shines, though. Now, in years past, he has been shot out of a cannon.
3, 2, 1! Oh my God, he did it! Oh my God, he did it!
Yeah, how can we forget that, right? But that wasn't really Izzo. Backstory to that one is pretty funny as well. But moving on, he also drove an Indy car on the court, performed a Kiss concert, and even had Tom Cruise in the building. Or so I thought he was. All right, or a fake Tom Cruise. But he always is a pretty good lookalike, has a pretty good lookalike in the building. The night will conclude with a scrimmage from both teams. That's going to be a fun time, folks. And also, it's homecoming weekend here at Michigan State University, and the annual homecoming parade begins tonight at 6 p.m. The parade will start at the Hanna Community Center, travel down Abbott to Grand River and into campus at Collingwood entrance, at the Collingwood entrance, and the parade will include the Spartan Marching Band, the MSU Alumni Band, the MSU Cheerleaders and Dance Team, student organizations, members of Greek Life, and so much more. And guess who your grand marshals are? Tom and Loopy Izzo. Fantastic stuff, folks. And Isaac Constance and myself, we will be emceeing the homecoming parade starting around 6 o'clock. We will be stationed in front of the Michigan State Auditorium. And Ryan Schuling of 92.1 Team, as well as WLNS TV6's own Sherry Jones, they will be stationed in front of the MSU Union.
Correct.
Yeah. Right? Okay, I want to make sure I got that right. Thank you, Isaac. All right, moving on now. The MSU hockey team begins the season tonight as they face Lake Superior State and Sault Ste. Marie at 7:30 p.m. The Spartans will look to rebound from a disappointing season a year ago where they finished in fifth place and 22 points behind Minnesota in the Big Ten. MSU is not ranked, nor did they receive any votes in the U.S. College Hockey Online rankings. In fact, the other five Big Ten teams are all ranked higher or receive votes. You can hear the game on the Spartan Sports Network, WJIM 1240. The Detroit Red Wings lost their first game of the year, 6-4, to the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Wings started off hot as newcomer Thomas Vanek scored twice in the first period to put the Wings up 2-0. After the second period, the Wings were up 3-2. The downfall didn't happen until the third period. The Lightning scored three straight goals in the third period when Danny DeKeyser scored on a fluke play to put the Wings down 5-4. Former Red Wing Valtteri Filppula scored an empty net goal to make the final 6-4. Now, three of the Lightning's goals were scored on the power play, something Red Wings head coach Jeff Blasher was not happy with. He said they had too many dumb penalties, I should say. Now, the Wings stay in Florida as their next game is against the Florida Panthers on Saturday at 7 p.m. The Detroit Pistons, with Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, and Marcus Morris out, they snuck out of Atlanta with a win. Yes, a 99-94 victory of the Hawks in their third preseason game. Again, it's just preseason here. But Ish Smith, the assumed starting point guard, led the Pistons with 18 points, 8 assists. Detroit improves to 1-2 in the preseason, and they take on the Philadelphia 76ers on Saturday at 7 p.m. out in Philly. And last, but certainly not least, you don't have to be a baseball fan to love what happened last night. If you love sports or even drama, you were glued to the TV for last night's NLDS Game 5.
Something monumental happened. Yeah, Clayton Kershaw. He's in the bullpen now, guys.
And here comes Dave Roberts. He's pointing to the bullpen, and they're going to their ace.
The pitch to Defoe.
Swung on and missed. Strike three. Dropped by Ruiz. Throws to first. And the Dodgers are going to Chicago. The Dodgers come from behind to win 3-2.
That's right. The L.A. Dodgers defeated the Washington Nationals 4-3 to win the NLDS. L.A. starter Rich Hill was pulled after 2 2/3 innings. And the Dodgers bullpen, which included starter Clayton Kershaw, went the remaining 6 1/3 innings. Now, get this, the Dodgers will move on to face the Chicago Cubs in the National League Championship Series. Game 1 is tomorrow at 8 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. Looking forward to that series, folks. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
my perspective, you know, our players are probably getting bombarded with things as well. So when they come to practice, to me, there's got to be a little bit of a sanctuary there. You know, we got to keep coaching positively, stand in there and be strong as people, and understand that we got to get things fixed. Dug a hole, like I said before, got to dig our way out of that hole. And there is no easy remedies for things like that. So got to remain positive in that respect and keep coaching. Beyond that, you know, just take that approach of one focus, and that focus is now to beat Northwestern and then move from there, and we get what we get.
And that is how we start this Friday afternoon Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, we are so honored you've allowed Current Sports to close out your week. My, oh my, how time flies when you're having fun. And I can't believe that it is Friday, folks. And I really can't believe that it's homecoming weekend here at Michigan State University. Wow. Can you believe that? Crazy, crazy stuff. I know there's so many Michigan State alumni in the house to sort of reminisce on their respective college days. Again, it'll be kicking off with the Michigan State Homecoming Parade that will start at 6 p.m. Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, along with myself, we will be rocking the mic at stage two of the parade route in front of the MSU Auditorium. Isaac, I am excited for it. And you know what? I'm a bit wary, though, because we did not receive our scripts just yet.
No, we didn't.
And I tell you what, Regina Cross, who is doing, and Regina listens every, I mean, she listens every day. I love Regina.
Somewhere in between the 70 hours a week she works,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly, right? She's so busy. And, you know, we sat down. It's funny because we sat down during the homecoming parade meeting. And we're sitting there with Ryan Schuling of the team 92-1. And Sherry Jones of Channel 6 News comes in, a former co-worker of mine. Love Sherry. And we're sitting down, and they give us the script of last year's MSU homecoming parade. And it is, oh, my goodness, it's like an NFL playbook, folks. I mean, so many, I mean, just stacks and stacks of paper on top of one another. So looking at the script, it was a bit intimidating. I'm sitting there saying, okay, wow. All right, that's a lot of names that I hope I pronounce well. But at the same time, it is going to be a very fun time, Isaac. So I'm looking forward to it tonight, my man.
Oh, yeah. I haven't done all my research just yet. You know, we've got a good 2 hours after the show to prepare. So right, it's going to be stacking it up right there. But it should be a great time. I'm looking forward to it. And what a great year to hold it for, too. First off, the MSU football team. Obviously, we'll get to them in a little bit.
Yeah,
but
we will.
The MSU basketball team has so much energy surrounding it this season. And as you mentioned earlier, you have so many MSU teams who are just killing it this year between golf, soccer. You also got cross country is always mm-hmm. great. So
yep.
You've got so many teams who you can just stand up and applaud for. It's nice and easy job for us to host that.
Well, it's funny you bring it up because it's going to be a busy night for me. After I get done with the homecoming parade, I'm shooting over to the Brez to MC Midnight Madness. And, you know, I'm sitting back racking my brain on how I'm going to get this crowd riled up and excited, right? Because it hasn't been – it was easy for me last year. Because if you remember, the week prior to Midnight Madness last year, you had what Jack Ebling dubs the Perfect 10, right? I mean, what we dub here at Current Sports to be the rope-a-dope at the big house.
Rope-a-dope.
Exactly. As Michigan State pulls off that remarkable victory against U of M, my job was easy getting the crowd riled up because I just reminded them of what took place a week ago. But now – I'm taking, not the scenic route. I'm going another route here to try and get the crowd riled up. It won't be hard, though, because Spartan Nation is always on 20, okay? But I'm looking forward to tonight. It's going to be a fantastic night. Now, before we move on in the show, and I definitely want to get to the MLB playoffs because, goodness, have they been fun to watch or what? Now, I was actually flipping back and forth between Thursday Night Football and, of course, that L.A. Dodgers and Washington Nationals deciding game. Fun, fun game. We'll get to that later on in the show, but we will be remiss if we didn't start the show by, of course, addressing the Michigan State football team, which is certainly reeling right now. 3-game losing streak. This is a squad who has yet to find the win column when it comes to Big Ten Conference play. They are coming off an out-of-conference loss at the hands of the Brigham Young Cougars, the very first time that both of those schools had met on the gridiron. And now they try to shake that off, and they play a Northwestern team that is coming off a bye week. And prior to that, they, of course, had a big win, an upset win over Iowa. So let's just address it right now, folks. The question coming into this game for Michigan State is who in the world is going to be the starting quarterback? Now, you've heard our thoughts throughout this week on that topic. Again, to a quick summary of my thoughts, I didn't think it was the right move to bench Tyler O'Connor when you take into account how the play calling was just absolutely puzzling throughout the entire game. I didn't like Mark D'Antonio and his staff taking out Tyler O'Connor in favor of Damian Terry. Damian Terry did have a touchdown in that game. He also threw an INT in the short stint that he was in the game. So, Mark D'Antonio addressed the media on Tuesday morning at Spartan Stadium during his weekly press conference, and he did state that we do have an open quarterback competition between three guys. Of course, O'Connor, Terry, and Brian Lewerke. If I had to throw out a guess here, I think that Michigan State sticks with Tyler O'Connor. That's just me, Isaac. I think that Tyler O'Connor, now granted, and I actually had Griffin Wasik as well as Zachary Swizicki, our two PAs who are going to join us in the show in just a minute here. I was curious to know, you know, as far as turnovers go, I mean, what is Tyler O'Connor's TD to INT ratio right now? And right now he has 8 touchdowns on the year, 5 INTs. This is the risk you run when bringing in two quarterbacks to the fold who don't have a lot of experience. I mean, in both instances, we saw Brian Lewerke against Wisconsin and Damian Terry against BYU turn the football over in brief stints, brief outings with the team. The thing that you get with Tyler O'Connor is not only experience, but a guy who has the best poise out of the three, I think. So to shake up things and have, you know, and again, there is a case. I'm just saying, I think we will see Tyler O'Connor starting that game. There is a chance that maybe later on in that game, if the offense still isn't producing the way that Mark D'Antonio wants it to produce, there is a chance that we will see Damian Terry and Brian Lewerke. We may see all three of them get some playing time this weekend. But I think to start, I think that Michigan State has done a fair evaluation of what occurred on Saturday afternoon, and I think they will give Tyler O'Connor at least the starting nod to see if he can redeem himself. Disagree or agree?
Both. I agree with you in terms of the merits of Tyler O'Connor. I'm going to take the roundabout route here because I agree with everything you said. Tyler O'Connor, he's the secure pick for that starting quarterback position. He makes sense, and he probably shouldn't have been taken out in the first place. But you took him out, and now you've planted that seed of doubt in everybody's mind of, is he the guy? Is he the guy going forward? And at this point, I'm not sure if it makes sense to say, no, he is our guy. Never mind. That was a mistake last game from us. Pretty much that's what you'd be admitting if you were to start Damian Terry or Brian Lewerke. And as sad as this is, I don't think you can necessarily afford to second guess yourself or go back on what you already did on the starter's promise, if you would, that you broke in last game. So you've got to, in many ways, just kind of say,
they already
go
broke
forward.
It during the Wisconsin game, if you want to go that route, because they took him out during the Wisconsin game
But the Wisconsin game, too, was, I'd say that was more of a foregone conclusion once they took him out. I thought once Brian Lewerke went in, correct me if I'm wrong, that was pretty much 5 minutes left, 6 minutes left in the game. So there was really no room whatsoever to say, and we might just be holding him out and trying to keep him out and away from injuries as much as anything. Damian Terry was actually a strategic move. So, that's why the mumbling started after the BYU game.
So who do you think is the starting quarterback on Saturday?
I think Damian Terry starts on Saturday.
You're going with Terry. Let's invite our two PAs of the show for Friday's Current Sports. We've got Griffin Wasik and Zach Swizicki up in the house. How you guys doing? First off, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Al. How's it going?
I am doing fantastic, fellas. Now, I want to pose the same question to you all. We'll start with Zach here. Again, you just heard me lay out the entire situation that occurred last week and, heck, what is happening this entire year concerning the starting quarterback position of Tyler O'Connor. Who do you think suits up as a starter tomorrow afternoon, Zach?
It's got to be Tyler O'Connor. The season isn't completely out of hand yet. You lose one more Big Ten game. People forget that BYU is in a Big Ten game. If they things fall in the right order, the loser of Michigan, Ohio State, you know, that could determine who plays for the Big Ten championship. But Tyler O'Connor should be the starter this Saturday. You mentioned the play calling. Play calling was subpar, in my opinion. 11 passing attempts, that's not really anything to judge off of. I thought bringing in Terry was kind of a panic move from D'Antonio, which you'd think is the last person to panic in the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. So true. What about you, Griffin?
All right. I agree and disagree with everybody here. I think Tyler O'Connor is going to start the game under center, but I also think Damian Terry is going to come in and play a lot, kind of similar to what D'Antonio did in Columbus when Connor Cook went down. Now, you guys both mentioned play calling. When this happens, in my opinion, when O'Connor and Terry come in the game, I think you don't have Terry just come in and run the ball. You have to have Terry throw it and keep the defense honest.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of running the football, that's the key to making sure that Tyler O'Connor is comfortable in the pocket. When you have a balanced attack through the air and on the ground, heck, we saw it against Notre Dame. Okay, now granted, Notre Dame, as the year has gone on, Notre Dame has shown that they are not the team that we thought they were coming into this year. At the same time, when Michigan State has a balanced running attack like they had against Notre Dame, it allowed O'Connor to just have a level of comfort in the pocket. So I think Gerald Holmes showed a lot against BYU. We don't know about the health of L.J. Scott because, you know, going back to 2 weeks ago, I mean, we're still kind of like, you know, okay, is he 100%? Is he 90%? Where is he at? I think we'll see a heavy dosage of Gerald Holmes, and we'll see that offensive line try and open things up for him. But if that running game isn't clicking, it's going to be a long day for whoever is behind center on Saturday afternoon. Also, other areas of concern I want to point out, that this has been a problem all year. The pass rush for Michigan State, okay? The pass rush has been so bad this year. Michigan State actually ranks last in the Big Ten and 117th out of 128 teams in sacks per game. MSU is averaging one sack per game. Heck, they only have 5 sacks on the entire year. That is a problem because if your defense can't get pressure on the opposing quarterback, it allows whoever is playing quarterback for your opponent to really just pick you apart. And I know we've harped on the Michigan State secondary a lot this year, and it has not been up to par. It hasn't been a secondary. It hasn't been a no-fly zone of years past. We know that. But a lot of the blame also, the reason why, has to do with that pass rush, because eventually, I don't care if you are the number one ranked secondary in all of football, any quarterback who's given ample time to throw the football down the field is going to find somebody open after 5 seconds. Well, am I right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And what I want to see, too, is the health of both of those front lines, offensive and defensive. You mentioned MSU's also given up way too much pressure on the quarterback while not conversely creating enough pressure on the other end. You saw Demetrius Cooper go out in last game, and just all sorts of injuries that have plagued this team throughout. Brian Allen also checked out of several games this season. Every time he's came back, every time I've questioned, is he 100%? Is he good to go? He might still be the best he got at that position, but the thing is, you don't have enough returning starters. You don't have enough experience, and you don't have enough depth on either of these lines in order to have starters playing at 50% or 80%. You need everybody to be at their tip-top shape. And that's what I want to see from MSU tomorrow afternoon. See if everybody is good to go. Because Northwestern, they are one of the best 2-3 teams in the country. Don't let the record fool you. Pat Fitzgerald, is a fantastic coach. And that defense has been stingy this year against some defense, decent offenses.
And a point you bring up, Isaac, is the injuries for this Michigan State football team, especially the defense right now. I mean, you see second and third string guys forced into new roles due to injuries to the starters. Probably the biggest injury on this football team has been, the biggest loss by far, has been Riley Bulla. Riley Bulla is the leader of that defense and arguably the leader of that football team. Him going out so early in the year has really hurt this team. And other names to bring up, I mean, John Reschke, Chris Fry, Darian Hicks, Raekwon Williams, you mentioned Brian Allen, L.J. Scott.
Kevin Williams, too.
Exactly, yep. Kevin Williams. I mean, we could go down the list here. Michigan, and again, they don't have that luxury of having a bye week mid to late year to rest up. And that's simply going to hurt this team. When it comes to Northwestern, A name to look for here. I got a few things before we go to our predictions here. Justin Jackson, running back for NW. Three touchdown, 124-yard opener against WMU, Western Michigan, who has been row the boat. Again, any Western Michigan fans out there that are listening, enjoy P.J. Fleck while you can. Because I don't think this man is coming back to coach the Broncos next year. He is that good, folks. But anyway, when you look at that Northwestern opener against WMU, I mean, Justin Jackson was absolutely stellar. But since then, opponents have held Jackson to fewer than 100 yards in three straight games. Now, granted, that game against Iowa, that upset, Justin Jackson tore it up. 171 yards and a TD in that upset over the Hawkeyes. So watch for Justin Jackson. You got to contain him. And we mentioned the lack of pass rush, right? That concerns me when you have a guy like Justin Jackson coming to East Lansing. And also, how about this? You know, Clayton Thorson, the sophomore quarterback for the Wildcats. Very impressive stuff from him. 18 of 30 and three touchdowns in that win at Iowa. And get this. Each of those three touchdown passes were to Austin Carr, who is currently leading the Big Ten in receiving yards. Fellas, before we hit our first break, I want to get you one area of concern for MSU. Give me a winner and why. This time, we'll start with Griffin.
Well, I think that area of concern is the pass rush. As you said, only five sacks through five games. And when you don't get pressure to the quarterback and allow 5 seconds, you can't cover a guy. So Austin Carr is going to be wide open. And Thorson, with 5 seconds of time, he's going to be able to complete passes downfield to him. Now, in terms of score prediction, I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think it's going to be low scoring and an ugly game. I think Michigan State wins 17-14. But I just want to say one thing. I want to call out the student section and the fans. Because when basically 75% of that student section is gone in the fourth quarter after Taysom Hill had a 12-yard run and Michigan State's only down 10 points, there's still time. There's still timeouts. And it's awful. The game temperature is going to be 68 degrees. There's no excuse of bad weather and stuff. I want Michigan State fans to come out and support and stay for the game.
Look at Griffin with the calling card to the student section. And, you know, before we move forward and we get to Zach here, and I want to ask you this, Zach, and Griffin, you've touched on it, because you guys are students. I graduated from MSU in 2012. And, you know, I remember when I started to cover the MSU football games, I remember looking up in the stands, and this is when MSU was really hot, right, when they started to really get it going starting in 2012, right? And the student section, I mean, they were there. You know what I mean? It was packed and everybody's going nuts. And this is the thing about the student section. The student section, and correct me if you disagree, but the student section to me, if it's a big game, if they're playing a big name, for example, Notre Dame. Notre Dame isn't having a great year this year, right?
Yep.
But it's still the Fighting Irish. It's still Notre Dame. If that game is against Notre Dame and it's on, you know, national TV, the student section is going to show up. You know, they show up for the big games, but against a Brigham Young. I mean, I sat up there in that press box this past weekend, and I evaluated the student section against Brigham Young, and it was sparse. I'm sitting there saying to myself, where the heck are the students at? You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny, because you say big game. I think it's more big name.
It's about the name. That's what I'm saying.
It's not game. It's name.
The name,
because
right.
The thing is, I was at the game against Nebraska my freshman year, which is the one that the student section caught the most flack for when they all left early, and Nebraska made the miraculous comeback to really draw the game close to even in the final seconds. And I left early too, because I was wearing those overalls, the striped overalls, nothing underneath. I was freezing, worried about hypothermia. Different story. But anyway, the thing is, students left early from that game because it was Nebraska against a Michigan, against Ohio State. No one's leaving early. Even though in this season, BYU very well might have been the most important game in terms of forecasting the season ahead.
I want to play devil's advocate just for 1 second, though, because I remember that Nebraska game, and I stood up for the student section, because this is why.
Me too.
I remember when I was having this conversation on the air. If it's a late game, first off, you're college students, so I get it. I'm not too far removed from college. I know what it's like on a Saturday night, you know what I mean? You know, Ricks, Dublin, I get it. I get it. I certainly get it. If the game looks like it's in hand, and the weather is crappy. It was cold and rainy that night, Isaac. And it's a Saturday night, and you're a college student. You really expect them to stay throughout the duration of that game? Let's keep it real here. No, I'm checking out.
Well, and my point on that was the game was also in the bag, in hand.
Like it
was in the house, in fact. You already carried the groceries home. So the thing is, what the students did is they left early. That's fine. The team left early, too. Yeah. That was the problem, bigger than the students leaving early.
And so
that
I can't
2 years ago.
I cannot, in certain circumstances, especially if the weather's crappy, if it's too late, I get why the students leave. And especially, you know, the fact that when you sit home and watch these games now on high definition and you get all the camera angles and all the analysis, sometimes sitting back at home with the brew on the couch watching the game is a better experience than being at the game and watching it. That's just me, though. Let's go with Zach.
Touching on the student section, I think it was Purdue last year was a homecoming game last year, and it was just pouring rain. I was in the student section, and kids were staying there until the third quarter, and I think it was Tennessee or Alabama, one of the SEC teams had a home game, and some of their fans started chirping at MSU, it was Georgia, I think, and they had a big SEC game, and it was beautiful weather, and they're chirping at MSU because Purdue made it close, and it's the weather's going to be nice Saturday, so I back up Griffin's point. The student section should be good.
They should be there again, 3:30 against Northwestern. You lost three straight. They need to be there. I hear you, Griffin.
Exactly. So if they have any type of a home field advantage, that's going to help. But the run defense is what I'm looking at this week. Jamal Williams, one of the best rushers in the country, totaled 163 yards last week on 30 carries. This week they have Justin Jackson, as you mentioned, 171 yards in their last game against Iowa. They had a bye week last week, so he's going to be good to go. He's going to be fully healthy, time to prepare. And the duo of him and Thorson, they've been struggling against good quarterback running back duos. So if they can have any type of run defense and then like the pass rush, just they need to be able to feed off of each other. If the defense not playing well, the offense needs to play well. Play calling also is what I mentioned. Dave Warner, his seat should be pretty hot if it's not already. I don't want to call him out, but he's, like I said, he's a 6-year-old playing Madden. It's extremely predictable, extremely I don't know what he's doing half the time. 11 pass attempts for O'Connor, and then you take him out. It just seemed like a panic move. I'll go MSU 21, Northwestern. I'll give him 18. It'll be close.
Okay. With all that being said, you're still picking MSU.
They need a win, and I don't think D'Antoni is going to let them lose 4 games in a row.
Backs against the wall. Isaac.
Al, I said this to you off the air. I'm 1-4 on the season in my predictions.
I'm not that great either. Exactly.
No, same as you. And the only one which we called MSU to lose, they won against Notre Dame. So you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to be riling up Spartan fans later today at the homecoming parade. But I've been hurt too many times now. I've got to pick Northwestern. And I think this is a very good Northwestern team. I'm not just saying that. Pat Fitzgerald, like I said, fantastic job with the team. Caleb Thorson, Clayton Thorson, somebody I really trust at the quarterback position because partially of what Trevor Siemian's doing in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So I really trust Northwestern. I don't trust MSU that much right now. I'm going Northwestern 24-20 over MSU.
You must have read my notes, brother, because I'm not picking MSU to win this either. I'm going Northwestern 17-14. Hopefully, we're doing reverse psychology here, folks, okay? We're hoping that reverse psychology will play a part in this, all right? So I want to know what you guys think, though, our listeners out there. Call in, give us a score prediction, give us your thoughts and predictions on the Michigan State and Northwestern 101st homecoming matchup Saturday afternoon. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will introduce you to our newest current sports intern who is from Illinois and probably the biggest Chicago Cubs fan you ever meet in your life, all right? Mr. David Greenberg will join me here on the show. We'll talk about the MLB playoffs and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, if you want to be a part of the show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Folks, wow, The MLB playoffs have been just fun. I don't know if there's any other word to describe it. I mean, it's always my favorite time of the year to just sit back and watch teams competing for a World Series championship. There are so many different storylines that you can pick apart in this year's Major League Baseball playoffs. I mean, you had last night a thrilling NLDS Game 5 against the when it comes to the LA Dodgers and, of course, the Washington Nationals. Of course, the Dodgers pull out that 4-3 win to advance to the NLCS, and it's just so cool because, first off, one of the biggest storylines when you look at the entire MLB playoffs is the Chicago Cubs. I mean, this is a team that has not won a World Series, folks, in 107 years. You have to go all the way back to 1908, okay? So now when you look at the entire spectrum of things, you got Toronto taking on Cleveland. Then, of course, you have the Dodgers taking on the Cubs. The final four have been set, all right? And right now, before I proceed here, I want to invite to the show our newest current sports intern who will be helping us out more so on the current sports TV side of things. We've got David Greenberg, who hails from, of course, Illinois and is, as I mentioned before the first break, a huge Chicago Cubs fan. David, first off, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, Al. How are you?
I am fantastic. Now, briefly here, we won't hold you up long.
Sure.
I want to talk about the Chicago Cubs. Again, you're from Illinois. Talk about just the roots of where your fandom for the Cubs team lies.
Sure. I mean, it started when I was really young. I just remember the good old days, probably when it was, you know, Mark Pryor and Carlos Zambrano, Kerry Wood, those days when it was all, you know, pitching for the Cubs. And then, you know, growing up, you're getting to see the really bad side of the Cubs. And then now, ever since we've gotten Theo Epstein, it's been kind of that rebuilding that everyone's talking about. And now it's finally here. And from what I'm hearing from people at home, the city is just exploding.
Oh, I'm certain. And you know what? It's funny because it is homecoming weekend. And every homecoming weekend, I mean, you know, I graduated in 2012. So, you know, all these alumni come back to campus, and a lot of my friends and my fraternity brothers, they come back to campus. And right now in studio, actually behind the glass to call them out, I've got my best friend, like a brother to me, my college roommate, Will Watkins. And Will, actually, he lives in Chicago right now, works in Chicago, and he has seen the Chicago sports fan base up close and personal firsthand. And it's always fun when I bump into a Chicago fan, especially a Cubs fan, and get to chat with them like yourself about the heartbreak you guys have gone through year after year after year. What's it been like? What is it like as a Cubs fan?
Oh, boy. It's an emotional ride is what it is. Just, I mean, like I said earlier, just the bad times. Even when the bad times were there, you still want to root for them and you still watch. As bad as they were, losing over 100 games, as bad as they were, you still watch and you just kind of, you pray that they're going to win just one, you know, pull it out in the end. But now it's like this year, especially this year and last year was just... I think I showed you that video that one time with me from the playoffs last year when I was screaming at my TV because I was so pumped up about that Kyle Schwarber home run. But everything has been crazy.
David, do fans of the Cubs really believe that this is finally the year that the Cubs will do it? And why? What makes this team special?
It's just so many things make this team special. I was watching MLB Network. They did a little MLB playoff preview, and they were. And I remember this. The host asked the analyst. She said, "I know that the Cubs are the best team in baseball right now, and everyone knows their strengths. What are their weaknesses?" And they were sitting there, and I remember Mark DeRosa was sitting there, who was a former second baseman for the Cubs and is now working for MLB Network. He's sitting there, and she asked him, she goes, you know, you got to give me an answer. And he's just sitting there, just shaking his head. And eventually, he's just like, the only thing that I can think of is history. That just simply, it's luck for them because their team is so good. There's so much depth at every position. They have the best, one of, if not the best manager in baseball right now, who has so many different options at every single position. I mean, whether it's playing Chris Bryant in the outfield or third base, playing Javi Baez in the infield or at any infield position, really. I mean, first, second, third, short, like anywhere. Mm-hmm. He can play that. He's got three great catchers that he can use for different pitchers. I mean, when John Lester's year one, Kyle Hendricks year two, and last year's Cy Young Award winner Jake Arrieta is pitching game three for you. I mean, that just screams at how much depth and how talented they really are.
Joe Maddon definitely does have an embarrassment of riches this year, right? And this is the point I made earlier this week, David, that when you look at this team, this isn't just a team that's built for, you know, a 2016 World Series championship.
Oh, yeah.
But they're so young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a team that's built for for like 5 to 10 years to compete for World Series championships. I mean, that has to be pretty encouraging, even if we're possibly talking about 108 years.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think so. And one of the smartest moves that Theo Epstein and that Cubs front office had ever made was last year. I don't know if you remember, at the beginning of the year, everyone was, after spring training, everyone was like, Chris Bryant's going to start for the Cubs game one opening day, and they didn't end up calling him up so that they could get him for that extra year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They all said, you know, what if the Cubs miss the playoffs or don't get the wild card because of that? Well, you know what? Cubs got the wild card. Cubs beat the Cardinals in the NLDS. We got swept by the Mets. Whatever. I'm over
it. Don't want to think about that,
right? I'm over it now. I don't want to talk about it. And I'm very thankful we don't have to play Daniel Murphy again.
Right.
But no, I mean, definitely, we're built for a team that's, I mean, I think their average age is like 26. Like Javi Baez, like 22. Addison Russell, 21.
Exactly.
And their oldest player right now, like besides David Ross, like of that core team is Anthony Rizzo, who's like, I think, just turned 27.
Right, right.
So,
correct. You know, and I sit there and I looked at that roster the other day. I looked at the ages of each players, and I'm saying to myself, wow, I just turned 26 years old. What in the world am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
All right, why aren't I playing for the Chicago Cubs?
Yeah.
I could go on a rant about why I'm not, but you get it, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Give us a bit of a preview of this matchup. Dodgers, Cubs, you saw what happened last night. What was so interesting about that game last night? I mean, first off, it was a fantastic game. You have Max Scherzer on the mound.
Yeah.
Max gave up that homer to Peterson, and I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, are they going to take him out the game now? I flipped over to Thursday Night Football. I flip it back to the game. Max is no longer on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone on this rant. I went on this rant earlier in the week about, you know, when it comes to baseball, sometimes, I mean, Max was dealing. He was dealing that game. I don't know, just because he gave up that homer to Peterson, I don't know, because his pitch count wasn't crazy out there. I don't know if I'm taking Max out that game.
Yeah.
They did. And again, there were multiple pitching changes that occurred as that game went on. Dodgers had all momentum. They go on to win that game. We even saw Clayton Kershaw, who we saw not too long ago.
The ninth out of nowhere.
Exactly. Kershaw comes in and locks the door on the Nationals.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how surprising was watching that last night?
I mean, every part of that was surprising. I mean, you talked about them taking out Max Scherzer, who was a former Cy Young Award winner, who's your undoubted ace, who you gave him a huge contract. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's probably going to win the Cy Young this year for the Nationals, if not John Lester or Kyle Hendricks or anybody like that. But yeah, I mean, seeing Kershaw, and then another move the Dodgers made, they took out Rich Hill after giving up one run in four and a third inning. I mean,
his leash was very short, wasn't it?
It had to have been. I mean, a very short leash, just one run, and you take him out in four and a third inning, and then putting in your closer in the seventh inning for a 9-out save. I mean, Kenley Jansen threw over 50 pitches last night, which is ridiculous for a closer.
Right. Oh, that's way up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So now when you look at this matchup for the Dodgers and the Cubs here, what just preview it for us. I mean, what are you expecting in this series?
Sure. I mean, obviously, I think the Cubs are going to end up pulling it out just simply because of the brilliant mind of Joe Maddon, the depth that the Cubs have, and, you know, the lack of depth that the Dodgers have. I mean, really, all they have is, you know, Clayton Kershaw, who pitched maybe four times in that.
That arm has to be a bit sore, right?
Yeah, I mean, he pitched last night on one night's rest. Granted, he only had to get two outs, but I mean, still, like, starting pitchers have a routine where you know, they have to fulfill that. Otherwise, they're not going to feel great. And I mean, coming in last night on one day's rest and then 2 days before that pitched again. You know, Adrian Gonzalez is up there in age. Turner, the third baseman, is he's having a pretty good postseason, but I just think that the Dodgers aren't fully there yet. I think they're they will be in a couple of years. I think when Jock Peterson gets a little bit older, the Dodgers always have so much money for free agency. I think in a couple of years they'll definitely make it to the World Series, but I think this year the Cubs team just absolutely too strong. But the thing is, the Cubs need to play well, not like they did against the Giants. You can't go down three runs in the ninth inning and then put up a four spot in the top of the ninth.
Right. It's almost like they expect, we may be down.
Uh-huh.
We can turn it on whenever we want. It's the ninth. All right, let's turn it up. And they've been able to pull out games like that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's, man, that's living on the edge, isn't it?
That is living on the edge. And in playoff baseball, you can't live on the edge. You got to come out and you got to stay strong throughout the entire game. But yeah, I think that's my prediction.
So Cubs win how many games? What's the game to game ratio going to be like when they move on to the World Series?
I think there's no chance Kershaw starts tomorrow night. So I think that's a game one win for the Cubs. I don't think he starts game two either on that short of rest still. I think he'll pitch game three, first game in LA against Arrieta, and I think that is going to be a grueling pitching matchup.
It's
going
to be so fun. It's going to be Arrieta versus Kershaw.
It's going to be like a Bumgarner Arrieta in that first in that first series when the Giants won on 6-5 in the bottom of the 13th. But that was just an absolute pitching matchup. Kershaw, obviously one of the best in baseball, even came off being injured for a few months this year, came back and was just as if he hadn't skipped a beat. I think if the Dodgers offense can get enough runs off of Arrieta, who's pitches extremely well out west, I think that Kershaw shuts the door on the Cubs. I think it's another situation. Cubs win the first two, lose the game three, win game four, and then come back to Chicago and win.
And close it out?
And close it out, yeah.
So 4-1?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they'll meet who? Cleveland or Toronto?
See, this is – I've been going back and forth.
Oh, you've been going back and forth, okay.
On this one. I think – by far, best offense in the league is Toronto. I mean, what they do with the bats is exceptional. Josh Donaldson, Encarnacion, Bautista. I mean, that part of the lineup right there, that is scary. Like, that's probably scarier than facing, Bryant, Rizzo, and then whoever the Cubs have.
Yeah.
Just simply because of the power that they have. But I think it's going to come down to pitching in that series and whose pitching can be better. I mean, we saw against the Rangers, the Blue Jays just obliterated their pitching with offense, and it wasn't necessarily a defensive series for them. But I mean, Cleveland's got Trevor Bauer, who's pretty good. Corey Kluber's injured. That's a big loss for them.
Huge loss.
I think Cubs fans better get their passports ready to go to Toronto.
I like that. Toronto is just clicking right now.
Oh, yeah.
They really are. I mean, right at the end of the year when they were able to sneak into the playoffs, they have just been clicking ever since. Look at Cleveland. Cleveland had a 16-11 record in September.
Mm-hmm.
Not the greatest.
Mm-mm.
I may have to go to Toronto in that series as well, David.
Yeah.
All right, before we get you out of here and hit our final break of the show, you are also a walk-on on the Michigan State baseball team. Just talk about your experience, and how did you end up as a walk-on on the team with Jake Bosch Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty crazy experience. So, played all 4 years high school baseball, loved the sport, just growing up, watching it, playing it. And the thing that I love the most about it is just being on the team, and that's something that I knew I was going to miss, regardless of whether I was going to play or not at the next level. I thought it was something that I really wanted to, at least try to do. And so over the summer, I played catcher too in high school. So over the summer, I emailed Coach Boss and I said, introduced myself. My name's David Greenberg, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then told him, I played catcher in high school. I understand that bullpen catcher is a very valuable position. I know I'm not Division I talent good enough to necessarily play. But I just loved being around the team. And so if I, could get that opportunity to still be a part of it as a bullpen catcher, I would be so grateful. And so he, emailed me back, inviting me to the walk-on tryout. So I walked on and had a meeting with him, and he told me, we can't offer you a roster spot, but what we can give you is you can technically be a manager for us as a bullpen catcher. But, I mean, I love it. I loved every part of it. Just the walk-on experience itself, I never thought I'd be able to walk onto a Division I program, has been awesome. I mean, I met some amazing guys, met great coaches, and it's been awesome so far.
Well, I look forward to you working with us throughout the semester because, again, you know, you apply for our intern position here, and you definitely want to go into sports broadcasting mm-hmm. as well. But if some stretch of the imagination, you know, boss gives you a shot and you end up becoming a star for the team,
that would be.
I may be looking for another intern, all right?
Oh, yeah.
David, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, all right?
Thanks for having me.
Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this week here on Current Sports by hitting you with Reflection Friday and so much more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Wow, we have 8 minutes left here in the show. If you still want to call in, make it quick. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we hit Reflection Friday here, Isaac, I want to bring this story to the fold because I know you have an opinion on this one, okay? I certainly do. I read today that Dwayne Wade does not want to be viewed as a ring chaser. Of course, Dwayne Wade, now baller for the Chicago Bulls. He was formerly with the Heat, had a great career with the Miami Heat, and he has signed on with the Bulls. And Dwayne Wade has made it clear that he does not want to be viewed as a ring chaser a day after LeBron James acknowledged that he did try to get his good friend, Wade, to sign with the Cleveland Cavaliers over the summer. Here's what Wade had to say. Quote, listen, I'm not a ring chaser. I told you that. If I was ring chasing, it would be a different conversation. I'm lucky and I'm blessed. Obviously, we talked, but it's cool to talk about certain things, but nothing wrong with $3.5 million, but nothing wrong with it at all. And then he kind of goes on to say that, yeah, it just didn't go through. Now, Wade did say that LeBron never tried to sell him and Chris Bosh on signing with the Cavaliers in the summer of 2010. All three All-Stars ended up signing, or in Wade's case, re-signing with the Miami Heat that summer. Wade says, quote, absolutely not. Financially, I don't think they could be in the game if it came to that. I know they were trying to get Chris there in a trade at some point. Obviously, we met with a few different teams, but it came to us figuring out we could play together in Miami, put the monkey wrench in the whole thing when they came with the idea that they can get three players. We never thought it was possible. I was shocked when I heard it could happen, end quote. So, you know, it's interesting because Dwayne Wade, you know, saying that he does not want to be viewed as a ring chaser is interesting because on the contrary, in Miami, he linked up with LeBron and Chris Bosh, creating a quote-unquote super team, right? When those three came together, of course, there was a big parade. I guess you say a big, how can you put it? I guess it was a parade, just inside American Airlines Arena. A big parade saying, oh, you know, we're going to win championships, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, and they kind of went on and on and on, right? Rubbed the basketball world completely the wrong way. And I think LeBron has gotten the brunt of that criticism for how he handled it with the whole decision show and heading down, you know, to Miami and holding the whole parade and so on and so forth. LeBron has been criticized the most out of the three, I think. I think that's safe to say. And I think that it also rubbed Dwayne Wade the wrong way, if you ask me, because Dwayne is one of those players that wants to be viewed as an everybody likes me type of a guy, okay, at the end of the day. But at the same time, folks, He's a competitor, and he knows that if you want to cement your legacy, you have to win rings. Simple as that. So I found it, you know, quite interesting because LeBron James and Dwayne Wade are known for being the best of friends in the basketball world. And now you have this comment saying, I don't want to be viewed as a ring chaser. Is he implying that LeBron James is a ring chaser? Say it ain't so. I think we know what Dwayne Wade is trying to say. Maybe he's taking a jab at LeBron here. What do you think? What do you think, Isaac?
Yeah, I think the whole ring chaser thing. I heard Dwayne Wade also say recently, of course, super teams aren't bad for the NBA, which I take such issue with. I entirely disagree with that. Al, you shouldn't have called me in for this. There's no way I can give an equitable, fair distribution of my opinion about Dwayne Wade.
And you are
in
the
three
biggest
minutes.
Hater of Dwayne Wade I've ever met in my life.
I am
so
a
I'm not
proud
even,
hater. Too. I've got to say.
You don't even hide it. You're
no,
just like,
I put
I don't
it
like
on
Dwayne
my
Wade.
Sleeve. Actually, I'm wearing my Dwayne Wade heater t-shirt today.
Oh my gosh. I tell you, I just don't get it. I don't get it. We'll dive into that on Monday, okay? We'll pocket the conversation. In the meantime, we only have 3 minutes left here on the show. We love to close out each and every Friday's Current Sports Edition by reflecting on the week that was here on our airwaves and bringing to you some of our favorite stories that we got a chance to chat about and maybe a few that we didn't. We dub it again, Reflection Friday. All right, well, some of our most memorable moments here on the show throughout the week. First off, Isaac, I mean, we had two legends in Michigan State football live here on our in our studios on both Tuesday and Wednesday. On Tuesday, we had former Michigan State running back great, Mr. Bob Apiza, in the house. I mean, it was so cool. I mean, he's from Samoa, grew up in Hawaii. He was recruited by Duffy, you know, during the 60s and was a part of the 1966 national championship team. He was a part of the 10-10 tie between Michigan State and Notre Dame. So cool to have him in studio to talk about his Men of Sparta documentary. And on the following day, we had sports writing legend and Tom Shanahan in the house, as well as the very first African-American quarterback in Michigan State football history, Jimmy Ray. That by far were two of my favorite moments here on the show.
And I was going to bring that exact same up. It's almost hard to pick anything else because, especially with the perfect coalescing of time between this and homecoming weekend, when the theme is Spartans for Life, for these guys to come back on campus, Jimmy Ray, Bob Apiza, it was such a pleasure meeting both of them. It's just an honor. Two of the most revered figures in MSU football history. And I just couldn't say anything more about their presence on the radio show and how great it was to meet them in person as well.
Also, you know I'm a Cowboys fan, and my stomach turned over when Jerry Jones came out and said that when Tony Romo is healthy, he will be our starter.
Ugh.
Have you not seen what Dak Prescott is doing this year? So I'll reserve that for another time, another day. But, hey, folks, we're out of time. Again, reminder, Isaac and myself will be out in front of the MSU Auditorium as your MCs for the Michigan State Homecoming Parade starting at 6 p.m. Then I'll be heading over to the Breslin to MC Midnight Madness. Come say hello, hi. You know, we love to hear and see our listeners up close and personal. All right, folks, we'll be back at it same time, same place next week. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR. Be easy, people.